It was a Monday early in December when I first got involved in the Isabel Barney murder case. I'd driven down to Cottonwood twice that day, 2 10-mile round trips, trying to serve a subpoena on a witness in a battery case. The first time, he wasn't home. The second time, I caught him just as he pulled into his driveway from work. I handed him the papers, disregarding his annoyance, and took off again with my car radio thundering to mask his parting remarks, which were rude. He used a couple of words I hadn't heard in years. On my way into town, I did a detour past the office. The Kingman Building is a 3-story stucco structure, with parking tucked in at ground level and 2 floors of offices above. Across the facade, there are 6 pairs of floor-to-ceiling French doors that open inward for ventilation, each flanked by tall wooden shutters painted the soft verdigris of a greening copper roof. A shallow, wrought-iron bracket is secured across the lower half of each set of doors. The effect is largely decorative, but in a pinch might prevent a suicidal dog or a client's sulky child from flinging itself out the window in a fit of pique. The building straddles the property and has a driveway that passes through an arch on the right, opening up into a tiny parking lot in the rear. The one drawback is the parsimonious assignment of parking spaces. There are 6 permanent tenants and 12 parking spots. Since Lonnie owns the building, his law firm had been allotted 4. 1 for John, 1 for Martin, 1 for Lonnie, and 1 for Lonnie's secretary, Ida Ruth. The remaining 8 places were parceled out according to the individual leases. The rest of us had a choice of street parking or one of the public lots 3 blocks away. The local rates are absurdly cheap, given big city standards, but on my limited budget, the tab mounts up. Street parking downtown isn't metered, but it's restricted to 90 minutes, and the meter maids are quick to ticket you if you cheat by so much as a minute. As a consequence, I spent a lot of time either moving my car or cruising the area trying to ferret out a spot that was both close by and free. Happily, this exasperating situation only extends until 6 o'clock p.m. It was then 6:15, and the third-floor windows along the front were dark, suggesting that everyone had already gone home for the day. When I drove through the arch, I saw Lonnie's car was still in its slot. Ida Ruth's Toyota was gone, so I eased my car into her space next to his Mercedes. An unfamiliar pale blue Jaguar sedan was parked in John's slot. I hung my head out the car window and craned my neck. Lonnie's office lights were on, 2 oblongs of pale yellow against the slanting shadows from the roof. He was probably with a client. The days were getting steadily shorter, and a gloom settled over the town at that hour. Something in the air generated a longing for a wood fire, companionship, and the kind of cocktail that looks elegant in the print ads and tastes like liniment. I told myself I had work to do, but in truth it was just a way to postpone going home.